On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we chat about a big extension. Samuel Basayo and the Baltimore Orioles agreed to a long-term deal. Talk about some of the recent prospect call-ups around the league. I say what I think about the Washington Nationals. We go to Williamsport for some favorite players. And, of course, it's Friday, the good, the bad, and the ugly. I had a good time doing the show. We already recorded it. I think you're going to have a good time listening to this show right now. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that thinks the Yankees and the Red Sox should have their own faster pitch clock. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. Let's get a move on here, right? Like every MLB game, 18 seconds, 20 seconds, Yankees, Red Sox, 10 seconds. You got 10 seconds to throw the pitch.
Yeah, or, you know, maybe they should watch the Little League World Series and be inspired by the kids that just grab it and go. I mean, boy, there is no waiting around. You do not have time for replays. And it does feel like that would be kind of fair, almost like retroactively getting some time back from all the time we've spent watching eternal Yankees Red Sox games over the years before the pitch clock. If anyone deserves stricter limits, it is those two teams. I understand that the Thursday night game was not necessarily the most pleasant watch. I was watching Little League World Series, so you'll have to tell me all about that later. Jake, we have a lot to talk about on this Friday edition of Baseball Barbacast. Let's get right into it. We have some breaking news, and that is our opener.
The Baltimore Orioles have extended young catcher Samuel Basayo to an 8-year, $67 million contract extension. This news was first reported by Andy Kuska of the Baltimore Banner, who I'm supposed to watch a Premier League game with this afternoon. Those plans might be canceled now. Thanks, Orioles. Hate that for me. This is a big deal. This is a big deal for the Baltimore Orioles, a team that had the longest extension drought in Major League Baseball. Now, what does that actually mean, right? What does that actually matter? This organization had not shown a willingness to commit money and years or get to a point where they could agree with one of their many, many young players on an extension. And Basayo is a break from that. This is the first extension of this type under current general manager Mike Elias, who took over after the 2018 season. Jordan, what do you make of this news?
Yeah, I mean, Basayo is a pretty remarkable story. I think that this is a prospect because the Orioles have had so many other prospects that we've been talking about and so many top draft picks that have come up, some of which have flourished, some of which have flopped. Basayo has managed to sort of fly under the radar until this year when he very recently made his major league debut. But I remember I saw him in Double A last year when he was, I guess, like right before he even turned 20. And all this dude has done, you know, since he signed in 2020, and we'll talk about the importance of the Orioles even signing this guy in the first place, because I think there's a lot of larger context about Basayo's background and the player and the organization that is important. But really, 2023 was the real breakout. 20 home runs as an 18-year-old, reaches Double A. And I remember seeing him last year, I was like, oh, this dude is an absolute unit. I mean, this guy has probably the biggest, or in the conversation for the biggest, just like raw power projection, both current and future, of any hitter in the minor leagues. And it wasn't coming with a boatload of strikeouts. You know, he was, of course, he's swinging at a lot of pitches. He's chasing a lot, but the strikeouts were not excessive. And the power for a player that age, let alone someone who can play catcher, is just staggering. And he managed to, you know, make his major league debut this year. What was it, right before he turned 21 or right after he turned 21? And that just doesn't happen.
He is a very unique player for a number of reasons. Usually when you have prospects with top of the charts power, there is a mountain of swing and miss that goes along with it, more so than Chase, usually. And like Spencer Jones of the Yankees is a perfect example of that, right? It is 80 grade elite raw juice, and more swings and misses than a blindfolded bug catcher. Bisayo is much shorter to the baseball than that. And we already know that based upon swing data that is available to the public on StatCast. This was the case a couple days ago, but I believe he already has the fourth fastest average bat speed in the major leagues, which is remarkable, right?
Yeah.
I believe it is obviously Giancarlo Stanton, number one, mm-hmm. number one forever. And then O'Neill Cruz, Junior Caminero.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then him.
And that's an incredible stat too, because we talk about, you know, what produces raw power, I think is just a fascinating thing
yeah.
with all hitters. You know, everyone does it a little bit differently. Sometimes it's just an enormous person. Sometimes it's incredibly strong wrists. Sometimes it is just pure bat speed from kind of the whip and the mechanics. I think Caminero fits into that. Bisayo, yeah. I mean, the fact that we now know that this is not just pure strength, this is speed. This is like, he's a huge dude who is able to right. bring the bat through the zone with incredible force and to be able to make the contact that he's been able to do, all while being a catcher of, and we have to talk about him as a catcher because it's relevant to certainly the future of the Baltimore Orioles. And we'll bring Adley into this conversation in general. But it seems that he's made strides in ways that I think people already didn't expect. And now with Adley yeah. going on the IL, once again, he is going to get some real run here down the stretch, catching every day or close to every day in the major leagues. And this is the kind of player that even if he can catch 50, 60 games a season, the value of that versus him being a DH or a first baseman is immense, right? I mean, that's yeah. just how that's how you end up talking about, you know, some of the best overall players in the game. And that's what makes him really special. And I think bigger picture for the Orioles, as we look backwards before we kind of look forwards, what this means for them. It's also really significant because for literal decades, the Orioles essentially were punting yes. on investing internationally. This is just
huge.
And yeah. there were a couple teams that were doing this, but for various reasons, they just decided we are not going to essentially care whatsoever about spending money in the international market. Of course, you know, Dominican Republic, Venezuela, chief among them. And with Mike Elias and with some of the hires that they've made in their international department over the last half decade, that has slowly changed. They have invested in the literal facilities, in their academy in the Dominican Republic, and they have started to spend money at the top of the market. And signing Bisayo for $1.3 million, I think 5 years ago or so, that was, even at the time before yeah. we knew if he was going to be good or suck, because again, when you're signing 16-year-olds, you really don't know for sure how good they're going to be. Even that decision, that investment in identifying him, and then clearly a couple years later realizing that you found something, is a massive deal for the Orioles in their ability to bring in talent, to develop talent, to
yeah.
build up a farm system that is not just picking at the top of the draft every year.
And this team has been dunked on to a point, understandably, for the caucasticness of its top prospect lists, right? And now there are many reasons for that. One is that all of those dudes do kind of look the same, right? Like all the Orioles prospects, and they've all got like Adley, Jackson, Heston,
Hey, and it's not like they've changed that strategy. I mean, this year's a draft.
No, they have not.
I mean, we got another round of Ike and Slater. And
last year there was Vance, right? So I think that there are many criticisms that can be levied onto the current front office, but the Orioles' relative like inability to develop Latin American players does not fall on Mike Elias or the current ownership group whatsoever. And that is because of the tape delay involved with this type of investment. For years, the old regime, that is both the old ownership group under Peter Angelos and the old front office under Duquette, where they were not putting money or interest into the international market at all. When Elias takes over in 2019, he starts to put money into that. Bisayo signs in 2021, right? But it's not as if they woke up the morning of the day he signed and offered him that contract, right? Like these deals are being negotiated and agreed to often years in advance for these Latin American players. So I would imagine, what year do you think the Basayo deal was verbally agreed to? Like 2019?
That's, you know, yeah. I mean, 2020, it's different maybe with each even player. Earlier.
And so
I mean,
it's like,
sure.
It's taken a long time, but that's just how these things go. And this is the fruits of the labor that the Orioles have put into that market. And that is unequivocally a good thing, because you cannot compete as a modern major league organization without investing in Latin America. Now, obviously, like, there are icky parts of that world, and that's undeniable. But you have really two choices, right? You can punt it completely and not have any talent come out of there, or you can play the game. And you could play the game to various levels of morality, sure. But I'm just saying that the Orioles' decision to reinvest and re-enter that market, it leads to something like this. It leads to a moment here where you have Basayo extending for a long time.
Yeah, and I think that that's really important because, you know, talking to people who operate in this space and understand the dynamics behind it, and obviously money talks in all situations, but it's also important to have a success story like this. And we're at the earliest possible stages of a major league career, but it is important for other young players in the Dominican and Venezuela to be like, oh, yeah, Samuel Basayo signed with the Orioles. That worked out pretty well. I mean, this is something that you see. That it's not an accident that some of these teams end up signing the top players over and over, is because there is a comfort, there is a trust that this is a team. Now, as I said, it is still about how much money are you offering, but those relationships mean a huge, that's a huge deal. Okay, is this academy a place that I want to go train? Is this a group that I know I'm going to become the best possible player? And the Orioles identifying, signing, developing, you know, promoting, extending Samuel Basayo is already an enormous organizational victory. Now let's look ahead, because he could become a hell of a player that hits 40 homers, hits 50 homers. My goodness, right? If he's a catcher, even better. If he's a first base DH, this is still a impact player that clearly they believe in already after three major league games.
The type of player here, the TLDR, is what if Rafael Devers was a little bit bigger and could play catcher, right? Now, it's maybe not that level of barrel control, but it is a similar body type. It's swing. And that is the ceiling here, right? It is the best version of Rafael Devers with games behind the dish.
Yeah.
Now, behind the dish.
Because he just...
That's important.
Because he... Yes. So let's talk about that. So Adley Rutschman, who, of course, we assumed would be the... If you were just saying, well, that's what a franchise catcher looks like, the guy that goes 1-1, one of the best prospects in recent draft history, who comes up and is immediately awesome, and unfortunately, since coming up and immediately being awesome, has gotten worse every season, has dealt with injuries every season, is once again back on the IL, seemingly opening up a lane for at least right now for Basayo to play behind the plate every day. But even if Adley shows up to camp next season, fully healthy, ready to go, it's hard not to look at this and be like, all right, where are we going here? Because the Orioles will have every incentive to let Basayo catch as much as possible, because that is what is going to make him the most valuable player. Ultimately, Adley is slowly losing his grip on the, yeah, obviously I'm the Orioles catcher. This indisputably tells me that the organization is at least ready to consider the possibility that that is not the case. And I mean, Adley is his own discussion. His development is his own discussion. But this is a pretty remarkable thing. But you also can't totally blame the Orioles when you have a player like Basayo with his kind of talent, who right now is younger than Adley was when he was drafted, right? So like, he has already shown, he's already demonstrated power and impact in ways. And listen, Adley has been a good major leaguer for multiple seasons. We are not totally discarding him. And it's not that these players cannot coexist on the roster. There are... No one catches 150 games anymore, right? So there's ways for these guys to coexist. And that would be an awesome situation. If they could find a way for these guys to split a catcher and DH, that could end up being an extremely productive, awesome combination. And that would, I'm sure that is what the Orioles are hoping for. But Adley has a lot to prove at this point. And at this point, I'm not expecting that to happen this season. And now Basayo has this opportunity to prove himself defensively. And either way, we know he is going to get at bats, and that's going to maybe impact other parts of the roster at DH, at first base. We'll see. But Adley's was already a player that was having a season worth deeper reflection on, regardless of Bisaccia. But Bisaccia had slowly been creeping up over the past couple of years, and this day has already come a lot faster than I think a lot of us expected. And it definitely raises some questions about the roster moving forward.
Okay, so there are two components of Adley I want to talk about. One physical, one social. So from a physical perspective, I think the biggest takeaway is that Adley Rutschman's body has not held up as well to the rigors of catching every day at the big leagues as people anticipated. If you saw Adley Rutschman in person at any point during college, you said, that is the widest good athlete I have ever seen play baseball, right? He looked like a slimmed down Brian Urlacher. And it felt like the type of frame that was going to be able to carry a ton of innings behind the dish. That has not been the case. He has dealt with recurring injuries of various types last season, this season. And whether or not, like, he's dealt with injuries, but I would also say that the physical demands have dampened his abilities on the offensive side. If you take a look at his splits from 2024 and how well he was hitting as a DH, how well he was hitting as a catcher, they're pretty stark. And so I think that is one concern that is real and needs to be taken into account when evaluating Adley moving forward. The other one is the off-the-field leadership component. Okay, now I'm not in that room every day. I'm not on that team. When Adley was drafted, the way he was talked about is that this is like a Buster Posey type catcher who everyone get on my back. He's going to lead you to the promised land, not just because he can ball, but because he's got the it to him, right? And that, in my opinion, has not been the case. I'm not saying that Adley is a bad dude or a bad teammate or a bad leader. I'm saying he has not been that. Take a look at an article written by the aforementioned Andy Kuska last week with the headline, Jordan Westberg would like to see void in veteran leadership addressed this offseason. This story is about how the Orioles don't feel like they have the veteran voice in the room. If Adley Rutschman was what he was billed as from that perspective, this would not be a conversation, like, at all. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. I think that's totally fair. Again, this is his fourth season. This is not, and he's been around a lot of these guys for multiple years now. And so maybe it's unfair to hold these ridiculously lofty expectations, but that was what he was billed as and what it looked like he was trending towards. I mean, that rookie season was unbelievable. He finished second rookie of the year. He gets MVP votes. Same thing second year. He's an all-star silver slugger. Like, it all seemed to be trending in that direction. And so whether it is strictly because he has dealt with injuries and has been unable to be that face and voice in the locker room behind the plate as consistently as he would like, again, there are still skills here to love. I mean, there's still on-base ability here. You look at his chase rates, his whiff rates. Like, there's still something to build on here. This is not a bad player by any means. But I do agree with you that, especially with the actual offensive production going down, you would think you would still be leaning back on, well, clearly he's still the guy. And it does not appear that that has been the case.
And those two things are definitely intertwined, right? Like, the better you hit, the more you play, the more respect you get in the room. Sure. If you're under 30. If you're over 30, you can throw the experience in everyone's face in a good way. But Adley doesn't necessarily have that. And I think that those two things are intertwined, where if he had just been banging for the last 4 years and was the starting catcher of the All-Star game every year, I think he would have more sway in that room. But I think just, like, Gunnar is the far superior player. Right. I'm not saying you can't have multiple leaders in the room. And I'm also not saying that Adley cannot become that guy. Like, I still think he has those tools as a player and as a person. It's just that it has not happened to this point. And that is an unavoidable reality for him and for the Baltimore Orioles. That being said, and I want to finish with this. This is a good day in Oriole land. Right. This is a good day because Bisaccia, the organization's willingness to extend Bisaccia just tells you that their inability to do so before this is not an organizational philosophy, right? It is that the particular player and the negotiations did not match up. And getting a player this good signed at this point and not a year from now is a $100 million decision. You know what I mean? Like,
totally.
If you wait a year, then you're paying Julio prices. You're paying what's going to, like, Junior Caminero is going to cost $180 million instead of if they had signed him a year ago, right? Like,
yeah. We'll see.
That's never even happened. Right?
But you get my point. Sure.
Like, Bobby Witt was 277, I think. And so it's like, you have to make this decision earlier than you are comfortable with. We see the same with Roman Anthony, right? Doing it like year zero instead of year one keeps money in the pocket and allows you to allocate those resources elsewhere. And so that's the last point I kind of want to leave with is, good job. The savings, in quotes, that you get from this, where are they going, right? Are they going to go to extending Gunner or Westberg or even Adley or Jackson Holiday? I know some of them are Boris clients and that complicates things. Are they going to go to a free agent, right? I just don't want them to go to another Magna Carta is all I'm saying.
Yeah, fair point. But, and again, right, 8 years, $67 million, can max out around $90 million. And what you're doing, like, this is, I believe, would be buying out two or three free agent years from what I can tell, assuming this starts next year. So this is essentially with an option in 2034. So that would, you know, take him through the rest of his 20s. Because again, when you come up this early, you are on pace to reach free agency at a Juan Soto age. And so that's where you're super duper cashing in. Obviously, the Orioles being able to find a number that Bisaccia was comfortable with agreeing to. And as we said, with anyone that signs an extension this early in career, hell yeah, man, get that guaranteed $70 million. Like, duh, right? Of course. You know, sure, you could say, oh my God, he's leaving all this money. No, no, you cannot blame this 21-year-old kid for securing that level of money long term. It's good for the player. It's good for the team. And I'm excited to see what Samuel Bisaccia can become, because he is, it's happened very quickly, but he is still one of baseball's youngest players, of course. But I'm excited to see, because man, oh man, that is a big, strong dude that can hit the ball a long way. And now he'll be doing it for the Orioles for a long time. So good stuff. All right. Now, we were going to talk about Bisaccia briefly with the Adley news, because it was like, hey, Bisaccia's going to play a little bit more. That felt like a minor bit of news. This is, of course, much bigger, but we do have several other call-ups. So let's do it. Let's open up my prospect hut.
All right. We got a handful of these. Five that we're excited about. Bubba Chandler, Pirates. Carson Williams, Rays. Yostinson Garcia, Red Sox, the password. Reds, Zach Maxwell. Guardians, Parker Messick. Let's start with Bubba Chandler.
Bubba Chandler. This is one I thought we'd be talking about 3 months ago, but the Pirates decided to take their sweet time. Bubba Chandler, one of the top pitching prospects of baseball coming into the season. He finished last year at AAA. He is coming up. It sounds like he's going to pitch out of the bullpen in sort of a long relief. This is something that they've done with a couple of other their young pitchers, not named Paul Skeens. Kind of a strange way to handle this. I don't know why in a lost season you wouldn't just let him, if you're trying to control the innings, just let him go three or four innings and keep him on the routine that he's been doing for his whole career. I don't really understand this, but add it to the list of things you don't understand about the Pirates. Either way, this is someone they, of course, believe in is going to be a big part of their future in the rotation. Someone I am super duper high on, someone with a special fastball, kind of a similar trajectory as Jared Jones. And I think Bubba Chandler could be better than Jared Jones. We know Jared Jones, unfortunately, ended up getting hurt. But Chandler's an awesome story. I mean, he was like an unbelievable athlete in high school, four-star quarterback recruit. Pirates were able to give him enough money to sign out of high school. And he was also a two-way player because, again, just unreal athlete. But since he's focused on pitching too, man, oh man. I mean, that fastball is special. He's been striking out a ton of guys in AAA. And it sounds like he was just getting impatient and frustrated that he wasn't being getting called up. And basically everyone that wasn't the Pirates understood and agreed with it. His performance kind of tanked in AAA over the last couple months, but he's deserved to be in the big leagues for a while now. And I'm glad we will at least get a little taste of this before we go into next year, where it's going to be an interesting offseason in Pittsburgh. But this is the latest guy to join what looks like a pretty damn good rotation in Pittsburgh. And if they can ever figure out how to score runs, maybe we could take them more seriously. But I'm excited to watch Bubba. I think people are going to really enjoy it.
So he is the 11th Bubba.
Oh, wow.
In Major League history. Okay. The all-time leader in WAR career for a Bubba was Bubba Church, which is an incredible Bubba. 7.7 WAR over a six-year career in the 50s. Does Bubba Chandler become the GOAT Bubba?
Absolutely. Okay. This is a layup for sure. There's a Bubba in the Little League World Series. So we still got little kids being at least nicknamed Bubba, which is pretty funny. All right, let's go to
what's Bubba Chandler's given name?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a good question. What is Bubba Chandler's given name? Let me know.
I'll let you know.
Before we talk Roy about Carson Rubin. Williams. Whoa.
Roy.
Roy is not really a name we're seeing a lot of either. I haven't really thought about that in like the Bob or Bill or Bubba category. Roy. But all right, Roy. How about that? All right, let's talk about Carson
Rookie
Williams.
Of the year,
a much more standard baseball name, Carson Williams. Another top prospect. I mean, the first thing is he's coming up because Ha-Sung Kim is going back in the IL. What a waste of a season. Again, injuries, but like what a total nothing burger season this Ha-Sung Kim year has been for the Rays after they kind of surprisingly signed him. Hopefully he gets back on track next year. But now we get to see Carson Williams. Carson Williams is notable because he is a spectacular defensive shortstop, which is a fun guy to pair with Junior Caminero on the left side of the infield. He also has pretty impressive raw power. The problem is he strikes out a ton. And when you're striking out 34% of the time in AAA, I'm a little worried about how that is going to translate in the big leagues right away or really ever. Like there is a level where this is concern with Spencer Jones, but in Carson Williams' defense, he's an unbelievable defensive shortstop and he's 2 years younger than Spencer Jones. But when you're talking about strikeout rates at that level, that's where the hit tool risk is undeniably at a level where the bottom could just fall out and you just get exposed in the big leagues to a degree that makes you not totally unplayable. And remember, we've been watching Taylor Walls be the worst hitter in baseball essentially for multiple seasons, but he is one of, if not the best defensive shortstop. So clearly the Rays are fine if you can give some other skills beyond the defensive shortstop. So if Carson Williams hits 210 and hits 20 homers and is a damn good shortstop, like that's still a good player. But for him to actually become a real superstar, there's going to have to be some level of adjustment in terms of the contact. And I don't know how soon or if that will ever happen.
Yeah. That being said, he is nice with it on defense. Yeah. Like it is.
Yeah.
Is he better than Taylor Walls defensively? Probably not. Is it a more electric watch? Oh, yeah. And that's just because
with
he's
the
this,
chance
like, taller,
that he can
ganglier
hit the ball over
guy.
The fence also. Oh, that too.
Yeah, yeah.
Right,
this is
right.
Better.
It, yeah. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. No, I'm sure Rays fans are infinitely, even if he's striking out a ton, infinitely more excited to watch Carson Williams. And yeah, I got to say, like, we'll see if this sticks for the rest of this season, if, you know, going next year's season. But yeah, Carson Williams, Junior Caminero, two 21, 22-year-olds. Pretty like, sick. That's a pretty, and especially because, like, Caminero's probably never winning a gold glove a third. So it'll be nice to have. That's why Walls is important. That's why a defender like Williams is going to be important to have on that left side of the infield where they could, you know, combine for, I don't know, 60, 70 home runs. Like that's pretty sweet for a pair of 22-year-olds on the left side of the infield. All right. From a very generic name in Carson Williams to a name that none of us have ever seen before. Jostinson Garcia, J-H-O-S-T-Y-N-X-O-N, nicknamed the password because, yeah, it just looks like you smashed a bunch of letters and no one would ever guess it. Jostinson Garcia coming up for the Boston Red Sox, was activated on Thursday, did not make his debut in the series opener at Yankee Stadium. He has been raking in AAA pretty much all season. Now he comes up because Willy Abreu is injured. Now, Garcia is a right-handed hitter who generally destroys lefties. Garcia, of course, a left-hand hitter who destroys righties. Red Sox are facing Fried and Rodon this weekend, so it's a good matchup for Garcia to kind of get his feet wet. And this is another one where, you know, when you're a team, kind of we talk about with Basayo, but when you're a team with the Red Sox, when you have so many prospects that you're getting all this hype, you know, if Garcia was not named Jostinson, he really would have been flying under the radar. But because he has this awesome nickname and personality and hair and swing, he's managed to seize the Red Sox fans' attention. And now a guy who is probably going to be a little bit more volatile from a consistent production standpoint, but he's going to hit some fun home runs. Will he like be on the playoff roster? I highly doubt it, depending on the injuries. They already still have all this weird roster crunch that I still don't know what the plan is. But I'm excited that he's going to at least have a brief opportunity here to show us what he's got.
Jostensen.
That's our best Jostensen. Joe, but let us know if we're wrong.
Remember also, back in the day when
her brother? Or,
yeah, he does. Yeah. Johan Fran,
yeah. I don't know how he's doing, but not in the big leagues yet.
These are my twins.
Go ahead. You were saying something.
Johan Fran and Jostensen. How many people in the Boston area will start making their computer password Jostensen?
That's true. not twins from what I can tell. I believe Jostensen is the older one. But yeah, Johan Fran is pretty standard. He is still in A ball, having a decent season for a catcher. Two more. These two pitchers.
This is sick.
This is a very different physical vibe than the lithe, super slick Bubba Chandler on the mound. What an athlete. Here comes Zach Maxwell. Listed at, I believe, 6'6", 280, 275. I don't know what he's listed at.
I'll take this over. Dude, on both.
I mean, listen, he's a house. I mean, this guy.
Jordan, I have a question.
This guy throws 102. He strikes out the world. He walks the world. And now he's in the Reds bullpen.
Do you know who makes noise?
Tell me.
Big boys. Big boys make noise. And is what we have here. Zach Maxwell is a throwback large adult son. He is built like two linemen smushed together. He has an unbelievable nickname, which is Big Sugar.
Ooh, tell me about that.
Sugar. So this is from an article from Mark Sheldon at MLB.com, Reds reporter, during spring training. This is him relaying what Maxwell said. I was on ACC Network in college pitching for Georgia Tech against Louisville. Got a couple of outs in a big situation. This guy on the radio called me, quote, a big hunk of sugar. As I walked off the mound, apparently they got run. We lost the middle part. When I joined the Reds, I was asked if I had a nickname. I said it was Big Sugar and everyone ran with it. You should just embrace it. There's been worse nicknames. This is amazing. Maxwell's father, Tom, is 6'11 and a former college player of basketball at Idaho State. His brother is 13 and already standing at 6 feet tall. Yeah, big old boy. The Big Sugar.
Damn, Big Sugar. All right, so I know the Reds had already called up a super hard thrower in Luis May that has kind of been mixed results, but let's see it. Reds are going to be playing some high-stakes games here down the stretch, and I would love to see Zach Maxwell in some high-leverage innings.
I want to just tip my hat to the Reds, who over the years have been a wonderful home for big boys. Jonathan Broxton, 6'4", 285, was with the Reds, and of course, the largest of them all. Jumbo Diaz,
Humbo,
listed at 6'4", 315. Yes. Humbo, who I believe is still cooking down in the DR.
Really?
Jumbo Diaz.
Oh, I didn't know if he was still in Mexico. He
pitched one inning last winter. So I don't know what the deal is there. He's 41 and 6'4", 315. So who knows? Humbo's great. I spent a lot of time around him when I was living down there. But it's funny, right? Because you're like, man, like if that prospect puts it together, he could be better than that guy. I like the idea of, if Zach Maxwell adds 40 pounds,
right,
he can pass Humbo.
No, man. He's exactly the size he's meant to be, and I wish him the best of luck. One more call-up before we take a break. Parker Messick, left-hander for the Cleveland Guardians, made his debut and looked fantastic in Arizona, going 6 2/3 against the Snakes. This is someone who also probably should have been up like 2 months ago, finally gets a spot in the Guardians rotation. I hope he sticks there down the stretch. He is a very important pitcher. You know, when you lose a pitcher, you're counting on being in your rotation for the next few years to a gambling investigation. Every other young pitcher that comes up becomes a little bit more important. And Parker Messick is absolutely one of those, a lefty who also a kind of a thicker lad, but he's only 6 feet tall. So it's a sturdy build, very impressive pitcher, amazing college pitcher at Florida State. And now he is in the big leagues where he belongs. And I look forward to watching him up close in Cleveland, hopefully for years to come. All right, let's take a break. When we return, we will go around the league and talk about another hotshot rookie, Craig Kimbrell. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Let's go around the league.
Craig Kimbrell is back. You can't kill the man or the idea. Frankly, The Houston Astros have signed Craig MF and Kimbrell. So let's just quickly recap his year, right? One of the greatest relievers of all time, in my opinion, a Hall of Famer, the single greatest four-year run in the history of baseball from 2011 to 2014 with the Braves, 11.3 wins over 4 years as a reliever is outrageous, 268 innings, 436 strikeouts, and a 1.51 ERA. He has, you know, some down years, bounces back with the Red Sox, and then he just falls into kind of late career reliever volatility. Bad with the Orioles last year, signs with the Braves, okay? And the Braves are billing this as like, Craig Kimbrell's coming back. Like, we got Craig Kimbrell. Welcome home. Like, we love you, Craig. Thanks, Craig. People are hyped. He comes back. He throws a scoreless inning in which he gets hit really hard, I will say.
Not even in Atlanta, by the way.
On the road. On the road. And the Braves are like, thanks, Craig. Thanks for the memories. And I believe they just DFA his ass.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, why did you do that? Like, why did you do that to this guy? He then signs with the Rangers on a minor league deal. Okay. Yes. And just pitches a lot, I believe, in AAA with the Rangers.
He's been pitching in the minors. The other thing just to remember, like, When the Braves called him up and DFA'd him, they were off to a bad start, but it was early June. They were 27-35. Like, the season was not completely lost. And so they were like pretending like they were still making super serious baseball moves. But again, why even bother to call him up? Like, it just didn't make any sense. Anyway, he does go to the Rangers and has just been kind of hanging out there for the last 2 months. And I guess I would assume he had some sort of clause in his contract about, you know, if you don't promote me, I can become a free agent or I can sign somewhere else, or upward mobility clause that veterans have in the minors, where it's like, if you're not going to promote me and someone else will, then I'm out of here. And I would guess that is what happened here, as the Rangers didn't call him up. And so now the Astros were like, we'll take Craig Kimbrell. Sure, why not? Jake Mintz, does Craig Kimbrell throw a postseason pitch for the Houston Astros?
No, because they're not going to make the playoffs. Whoa! No, I'm kidding. he does not.
Okay. I mean, man, I don't know. The Astros are in such a weird spot. Like, I guess they still have injuries in the bullpen, obviously, because they have injuries on their whole roster. But like, why? What is this? They already have all these lefties. I guess Hader. So Hader's down. Does Kimbrell record a save in September? Like, I kind of feel like yes. As absurd as that is.
It would have to be on a
like,
day where Brian Abreu is down.
Correct. And if it's like the right pocket of righties. Oh, man. I think I'm taking over on 0.5 saves for Craig Kimbrell the rest of the way.
I'll take the under.
I don't know. Again,
the under?
You can't. The problem is like in the minors, you can't be like, oh, was he like closing for Round Rock? Like, that doesn't really mean anything in the minor leagues. But it did he record? Okay, it looks like he had 5 saves for Round Rock, including 3 in the last 10 days. So it seems like he's really been dialing it in. Yeah, man, I think he's gonna save some games. This is very Astros coded. Also, I imagine that Dana Brown loves Craig Kimbrell. It seems like a pretty
from their
obvious
Atlanta days thing. This will be the ninth team of Craig Kimbrell's career. Braves, Red Sox, Cubs, Phillies, Dodgers, remember that, Padres, Orioles, and White Sox. Now, if you want to watch Craig Kimbrell pitch next year, you might not be able to because this could be it. But if you did want to, Jordan, how would you go about watching a baseball game next year?
Good question. Well, quick correction. I guess I thought Dana Brown was with the Braves forever, but that's not true. He was with the Blue Jays and Nats, so never mind. I have no idea what his affinity for Craig Kimbrell is. Clearly enough to sign him under these circumstances, so I just wanted to correct the record there. Anyway, wonderful transition to baseball television rights. What a fun topic to discuss on a podcast. We've had a good amount of reporting on this over the last few weeks, you know, since Rob Manfred has spoken about it. I know Kendall Baker here at Yahoo has had some reporting. We had Andrew Marchand at The Athletic has kind of waded into these messy waters involving television rights and said, okay, what's going on here? And the latest update involves ESPN seemingly coming back to the table. You know, ESPN had this deal with MLB for their respective, you know, collection of television rights, which included Sunday Night Baseball and the Home Run Derby and the Wild Card. That was going to go through 2028. Both sides said, yeah, maybe we should rework this. So they decided to opt out after the season. But now they are already back negotiating, now involving the rights to a selection of teams that MLB had already taken over with the local television right fiasco that has, of course, defined sports and I would just say how people watch sports over the last 5 years. And so it does appear that ESPN is getting involved in acquiring the in-market rights for five teams, the D-backs, Guardians, Padres, Rockies, and Twins. And maybe they are not going to have a Sunday Night Baseball anymore. That seems like there's other people. We know Netflix is involved trying to get the Home Run Derby. Is NBC going to get Sunday Night Baseball? This is quite the game of broadcast rights, musical chairs, that is kind of hard to follow in real time. But at some point, it sounds like here soon, we are going to have an understanding about where we are going to be able to watch baseball in 2026 and beyond. And it does sound like it will meaningfully impact some of these markets in ways maybe better, maybe worse. I think the thing I'm most curious about, and I think a lot of people listening to this are most curious about, is some of the reporting involved with ESPN trying to get the rights to MLB TV or parts of MLB TV,
yeah.
What that would mean for how a product that has essentially functioned the same way for 20 years, blackouts aside, how would that change if MLB TV suddenly doesn't have a certain number of teams? That feels like a bad thing, but I don't know if that's exactly how this is going to work.
Oh, I just think it'll be all the out of market. Instead of going to MLB.com for the MLB TV interface, it'll look different and just live on the ESPN app. And what I'm actually most interested to see is how this shift in coverage over there impacts like the coverage, how the shift in TV rights impacts the shift in coverage. Like, are they going to hire more people? Are they going to have fewer people? The reality is ESPN as a television product has the biggest reach in our country, and they're, unwillingness over recent years to highlight baseball is a bad thing for our sport. I think that our sport has fought past that. And here's an example. ESPN, to promote their new DTC, direct-to-consumer streaming service, tweeted like one of those collages of all bunch of different athletes. I think there's like 100 athletes on here. Three baseball players, right? Like, does that focus, that spotlight change at all with this deal? I have no idea, but that's what I'm very interested in seeing.
Yeah, it seems like ESPN's interest in baseball has been very selective, and that has been communicated through their negotiation and through their actions. Actions in oftentimes speak a lot louder than words. And so actions and business deals speak louder than whatever they're saying about how much they care about baseball. So we will see how this shakes out. It does sound like where we find these games is going to change in the coming years, but that is not necessarily news. So it appears that we are approaching some sort of resolution. We will address it more as the news comes out. All right, Jake, let's get to your field report.
So I have been around the Washington Baseball Nationals now for a week, 2 weeks, really. And I, you know, Jordan, I'm sure you had this same thing when you moved and you went from being around the Reds to the Guardians and just kind of getting your arms around the world that you're going to be spending time around. In both of our cases, likely like the next 25 years of our lives in some way, right? And this last week in Nats land has been very fascinating to me. So you had the Phillies here and you had the Mets here. The context is that the context is that the Nats have stunk, right, in the second half. And that's not because they fired their GM and their manager. No, they were stinking before that and they have continued to stink after. And there is just a lack of energy at Nats Park recently because of that. Especially, at least for me, compared to what I've seen at Yankee Stadium and at Citi Field over the last number of years. And this week really highlighted that, right? Because you have all these former Nats strolling into the district, whether that is Trey Turner, Bryce Harper, Kyle Schwarber with the Phillies, Juan Soto with the Mets. And it's like all these fans going out to the game and being like, oh, yeah, like, man, what a life we lived here. Like, we had stars here, and we don't now. James Wood, is that to a point? I need to see more. He's been terrible over the last 2 months. I know he homered yesterday, but since the All-Star break, it has been rough sledding for him. And that all coincided with the return of Dylan Cruz, who was the second overall pick in the 2023 draft out of LSU, taken right behind Paul Skeens. Now, Cruz matriculated to the big leagues last year, maintained rookie status into this season, had a rough first month and a half, and then missed, I believe, 2.5 months with an oblique issue. He's been back for about a week, and he is the key to this whole thing, in my opinion. Dylan Cruz being a very good player, which I think he will, is an absolute must for the Nats. The moment that really stuck with me over the last couple of nights is the Mets are, I know the Nats won the series over the Mets, who are playing poorly, I get that. Mets kick their ass on Monday night or Tuesday night. Cruz hits a ball into the gap. They're down 7-0. He hits second base and goes for three in a meaningless game to like take the extra base. And that type of little thing, like the crowd pop, was sweet. And it's like he just has the energy and the vibe and like the aura kind of to make this thing matter again. It reminds me like a, and I like Alex Bregman, but like a less punchable Alex Bregman is kind of the player that I think he can be as an outfielder. So that's my Nats rant. Just being around them has kind of illustrated some of those thoughts in my mind. I'm curious for your take.
Yeah, no, and I think honestly, some of that you can apply. There are different stages in their competitive window for a lot of reasons, but some of the same conversation we were having about Adley, you know, you could say about just the Nationals in general, right? Their almost vacuum of veteran leadership and what that could look like, because there is a good amount of young talent that you're excited about, but who is the person that's going to be like, I am on the Nationals. I care about being on the Nationals. I care about the Nationals being good. I don't want us to be an embarrassment. I want to be a part of building this out of being, because that's the other thing that about why Adley was so important, is because it was coming out of this era of just absolute so much losing, right? And so he was supposed to be, okay, we got this because we sucked. Dylan Cruz, same kind of thing. And you know, James Wood falls into that too from a trade perspective of, okay, this, the significance of trading away Juan Soto, and then now you have James Wood, you know, and Abrams and all these other guys. But Dylan Cruz is so important in that sense. So you're spot on, both on the field, off the field. He can represent that, someone who comes from this incredible program at LSU where he only knows winning. He can't do it all by himself. There are so many things that are more important than Dylan Cruz that are going to make a difference as to whether they end up being good anytime soon or not. But I totally agree with you about him. And I know it's been mostly injury related, but this has been disappointing, a disappointing rookie season. Not that he's doomed, but it will make him going into next year. And hopefully he can have a big September and give us more reasons for excitement moving forward.
All right, let's take a break. When we get back, we will run you through some of the favorite players of the Little League World Series kids. Very excited about that. Do Good, Bad, Ugly, and preview the weekend. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. The Little League World Series is drawing to a close. The games have been spectacular. Jordan's a little bit more locked in than I am. Yeah?
I mean, it's just been, it has just been incredibly entertaining. Like these games this week, again, you got to get past that opening weekend where you have some of the weaker teams, but the championships on Saturday, we've got Connecticut against Nevada and Chinese Taipei against Aruba. So check those out. But I know, Jake, you have some data that you would like to share.
Yeah, so one of my favorite things about the Little League World Series is that it gives us a glimpse of what young baseball brains care about, right? Besides, you know, Adam Sandler, who is by far the most popular favorite actor, right? Like, these kids must have watched Happy Gilmore in the last 3 weeks, and that is just what is influencing that pick. But it's like, who are these kids' favorite baseball players, right? And does that tell us anything about how ball players appeal to the next generation, right? Like, because for us, like we're like, wow, I really enjoy watching like Trent Grisham, you know. But like, what are the kids like? That's what I want to know. And so I would go through and I compile all the times a kid says, "My name is Jake Mintz, and my favorite baseball player is Jordan Schusterman or whatever." Now, back in the day, they would have every kid say their favorite player, right, on the ESPN broadcast. That has changed, in my opinion, for the worse. Now it's, "My name is Jake Mintz and my favorite color is turquoise," or "My name is Jordan Schusterman and my favorite food is mushrooms," right? And so it's much more difficult to pick out these little moments where they say their favorite player, but because I'm a loser, I did it anyway. And I went through the broadcast and looked at all the lowers and listened to when, you know, Mike Monaco looks at his sheet of information behind the scenes and says, "Oh, Jimmy Timmy loves Blake Snell," right? And so I compiled 100, the first 100 I was able to find, and these are the results. Shocker, Shohei Ohtani, most popular player. Unsurprising. Here are other guys with more than
four. I would have been worried if that wasn't the case.
I would have been worried too. Here are the other players with more than four, okay? Mookie, 6. They must have heard him on the show, on our interview, on the podcast. And they were like, "That guy, I didn't know him. He seems great." Ronald Acuna Jr., 6. Fernando Tatis Jr., 5. Lindor, 5. Judge, 4. Freeman, 4. Machado, 4. Does anything stand out to you from that?
So I have noticed over the past few years, like Machado stands out. I think the Padres have resonated in a very real way. The Padres and Tatis, right? Tatis has absolutely ascended to that level in a way that, again, we've seen him in the postseason, but I think Tatis at the very start of his career, and then that has sustained since he has now come back and continued to be awesome.
The reason that I am fascinated by the Padres in this, right? So, like, let's just compare the Padres and the Phillies for a second. Like, I know it's much easier to hate the Phillies because of the Philly sports fandomness and like that. Like, people can do that in a way that it's harder to like.
But I know the kids don't care about that. Yeah.
Okay. So you have these two fan base or these two front offices that invested tons of money in players to make the teams good, right? Maybe beyond what we had expected from those ownership groups, right? And we have seen the benefits of that on a local level every day, where you turn on the TV and Citizens Bank Park is packed and Petco is packed, right? But I think it is so interesting that like Tatis, Machado, and the Padres as this like cultural experiment, right, have really broken through into the upper crust of "I'm from Idaho" or Aruba, and like my favorite team is not Dodgers, Yankees, Red Sox, Cubs. Like it's the Padres. And I think that organization deserves a hat tip for that.
I also think it probably speaks to Dodgers Padres as a rivalry, as something that just casual baseball fans are tuning into and almost picking aside, even if they aren't Dodgers or Padres fans. It's like those teams we've lumped together in a way that it's like, there's so many star players here that I'm excited to watch oh, you know what? I like Machado more than I like Mookie. Oh, I like Tatis more than I like Freddie Freeman. I could see that being a thing in a way that, like, right now with Yankees Red Sox, you know, you have Judge, but like, who is that on Boston? That doesn't exist right now. Maybe it ends up being Roman Anthony. Maybe it was Devers briefly, but that's something that, you know, if we're talking about a rivalry and that has takes up a lot of oxygen in the national space, I feel like Dodgers Padres is that.
And there's only the only Yankees and Red Sox to get multiple. This is my favorite player, Aaron Judge and Jaron Duran. I guess Mariano Rivera. Got two, but those are the only two. Sure. And that's with a team from Massachusetts and a team from Connecticut in the Little League World Series, right? Whereas there is no California team. And so, like, to me, if you had had a team from California, like, you would have even more Dodgers and Padres. And I think for you and me, as two people who grew up on the East Coast, like, we think of, you know, we try and move past that. But I think this just kind of really elucidated to me just Dodgers Padres has the sauce and has the grip of what kids are thinking about and caring about. So I just thought that was kind of interesting. A couple of other fun ones. Like, I just love the ones that are just one-offs, right? Like, the kid from Hawaii, or like there are two college players who got shout outs just recently drafted. Cam Cannarella, second round pick with the Marlins, who was playing at Clemson. He got a shout out. Iva Arquette, who was drafted in the first round by the Marlins, Hawaiian kid, got a shout out. You get a kid saying Barry Bonds. Alec Bohm is an incredible one. Gino Suarez, I believe, from the Venezuela team.
Pennsylvania kid. Yeah, yeah. So there's, I love the ones.
Only one Juan Soto.
Wow. And that's knowing Juan Soto is coming to Williamsport also.
I know.
You know, like, they could have picked Juan Soto, and then the ESPN would have been like, hey, you're Juan Soto's your favorite player? Here's Juan Soto.
Instead,
like,
we had a kid saying he's overrated. We have Ketel Marte. I don't know, man. He doesn't like playing. Is that good for the kids?
Okay. That's great.
One Mike Trout was really important to me. It hurts that there's just one. I understand that. But the recipes are still alive, right? Like, it's not dead forever,
dude, but like
12 year olds kids didn't see this. They didn't see him do this.
That's the thing. Them picking Mike Trout might as well be the same thing as picking Ken Griffey Jr. I mean, it's like, oh man, this guy used to be incredible. Like, who knows? Or picking Bo Jackson. I love like one they're picking. It's great. It's like, how is that your favorite? Is that your favorite player? But clearly, when they learned about them, they're like, that's the coolest thing. He is my favorite player.
The one surprise, and I'll finish with this, and I think this is just small sample size, is one Paul Skeens. Only one Paul Skeens. Mm. I think I would have predicted more than one Paul Skeens, and that someone besides Jonas Bárta from the Czech Republic would be riding with Skeens. That maybe, you know, no team from Ohio or Pittsburgh area. Like, still, I just thought Skeens was going to have a little bit more reach than that.
Yeah, no, it's good. You know, we talk about it when we at All-Star, we guess the most popular jerseys. I think that that's another way to tell. But I do think that this look into the global 12-year-old baseball player, it is a fun little sampling. So I appreciate you sharing that data. And yes, you can watch the Little League World Series Championship games this weekend. All right, Jake, it's Friday. It's time for the good, the bad, the ugly.
I can't remember the last time I was so excited for this. I'm amped, dude. And I'm going to begin here with my good.
Take it away.
Which is that your mean Mercedes has opened a baseball training facility. Now, you may say, Jake, who's your mean Mercedes? I started watching baseball in 2023. Well, your mean Mercedes came up at the beginning of 2021 with the Chicago White Sox, went 8 for his first 8, the first player in MLB history, I believe, to do that, to go 8 for 8 to start a season. He finished the month of April that year just crushing it. He had a 1.113 OPS on April 30th. He finished the season with a 732 OPS. He was then kind of, I believe, sent down by the White Sox, played a year with the Giants, and then that was kind of it for him. I got reports on Mercedes, like, all-time volatile teammate, dude. Not exactly the type of guy where you're like, he's going to coach one day. And I think it is amazing that the Yerminator has opened up his own facility. It is called the Yerminator Academy. The graphic that he posted on Instagram is unbelievable. It is graphic design is my passion to the nth degree. All right. It says the Yerminator Academy at the top in yellow writing, professional baseball player, personal trainer. The P in player is lowercase. Everything else starts with an uppercase. Then the number 73 in a different font, which was his number in the big leagues, but it is not clear that that's his number. There is a clip art of a baseball, a clip art of a glove, him swinging, and then it says, train with MLB record breaker, Yermin Mercedes, 8 hits to start the season, play like a pro, fire emoji. It's perfect. If you're in the Central Florida area and you can get better at the Yerminator Academy, please do so. He also tweeted out a video that involves him throwing underhand toss to what appears to be a 4-year-old, maybe a 3-year-old.
Train like a pro.
It reminds me, what do you say?
Train like a pro. That 4-year-old training.
It reminds me a little bit of the Yoenis video. Like, this is supposed to be a video in which Yermin is like showing that he's a good coach, but it's mostly just him hitting.
Dude, he's hitting softballs. Not even hitting baseballs. Yeah. I'm watching these videos. I love this so much. I know we sometimes make too much of Instagram follower counts. Yermin having 460,000 followers is incredible. The fact that the Yerminator Academy already has over 20K, like, dude resonates. So I can't believe none of the Little Leaguers said that Yermin was their favorite player, but now they can go train like a pro with him. That's awesome.
Yermin Mercedes!
So, Yermin, and I obviously hope he is back in the Dominican Winter League where he is the true, true star down there, but also, as you said, pretty volatile. All right, my good this week is Vinny Pasquantino. There are a couple hitters on some absolute heaters, Shea Langeliers and Bryce Terang, but they don't tweet funny things like Vinny does, so Vinny gets the nod here as the good, as he homers in all 4 games of their series against the Rangers, with the Royals taking 3 out of 4. First time in Vinny's career he has hit homers in 4 straight games, up to 26 home runs this season. Vinny's going to hit 30 homers this year, which is awesome. And he's been on fire for the last month. A big part of the Royals' success, slugging .657 over his last 26 games. And it's just an appreciation of the kind of hitter that Vinny is, because especially when he goes on these kind of slugging, hot streaks like this, Vinny is still a very unique hitter in the sense that he doesn't strike out. Like, he has like a 16% strikeout rate, which is, I think, one of the lowest. I think the only hitter with 25 homers with a lower strikeout rate in the big leagues is Jose Ramirez, which is a completely different kind of player. So I just wanted to shine some light on our pal Vinny, because he's raking, and I know he's been looking forward to showing that he is capable of this and being healthy and being on the field, and the Royals are right there. So Vinny, keep at it, man. So it's been fun to watch.
It's all just an extended spring training for Team Italy in the WBC in the spring.
True.
All right, my bad, is last night's Red Sox-Yankees game. This was a throwback to worse times. This felt like a pre-pitch clock era, Sunday night baseball, 4.5-hour Yankee-Red Sox slog. Now, it was 3:25 is where it clocked in at. There were 14 walks, 5 errors, a balk. It is the second longest, I went and looked, Sox-Yankees game of the pitch clock era. Now, that's only since 2023, I understand. But it really was long and felt long. But again, compared to what we used to have to, sit through, still pretty swift. 5 mid-inning pitching changes last night did not help things. It's just like, two outs and, they're going to Tim Hill. 2 outs, they're going to Steven Matz. Like, come on, guys. Just a yuck fest all around. The Roman Anthony 2-run shot in the 9th and the little bat discard was sweet. That was a pretty cool moment. But everything before that, I did not need to see.
Yeah, that's this is not great. If this is what this weekend has in store, I'm not sure how much I'm going to be able to tolerate it. But there's part of it. I'm sure there's some level of neutral fan that is enjoying watching both of these teams kind of scrap it out. And one of them has to lose, but one of them also has to win. So I know if you're the Blue Jays fan, like, I'm not sure if you're enjoying every second of this or hating every second of this. But
let us know.
I guess you just hope that they split and move on. My bad this week is the Twins getting swept by the A's at home. Now, this doesn't actually really matter, except for reasons I'm about to describe. But this was the first series, really the first week, where I looked at the schedule and I looked at the scores and I was like, boy, do I not care about that. I was like, you know, we have a pretty, you know, low bar for like what is going to intrigue us even down the stretch for teams that are not very good. There now, we are officially in the territory of some games where it's like, man, do I not care. However, because of draft positioning in the draft lottery, I will still care about these games. And the A's and the Twins are both in great position to plummet down the standings and secure a top pick, or at least better odds in the 2025 lottery for the 2026 draft. And I just wanted to remind folks about kind of the draft lottery setup. Most notably, that if you are a large market, you cannot get a draft, you cannot have a pick in the lottery in two consecutive years. That means the Washington Nationals, that means the Angels. And if you are any team,
the Rockies,
if you are any team, because the Rockies are not large market, you cannot have it in three consecutive years. And so the Rockies, even though they're going to lose 25 games, are not going, just like the White Sox last year, are not going to be eligible to pick in the lottery. So the teams to watch, the teams who want to suck very graciously, very respectfully down the stretch, White Sox are far and away. I mean, they're no one's catching them in terms of the best odds. But Pirates, Twins, A's, Braves, Orioles, Marlins, these are the teams that are going to kind of be shuffling for their lottery odds. And I just want to bring this up now. There is right now a consensus top player for the 2026 Major League Baseball draft. His name is Rock Chalowski, UCLA shortstop. And I'm bringing it up right here. Hashtag rock bottom. That is what these teams are going for. That is this year's suck for luck. Hashtag rock bottom, spelled R-O-C-H. And so if you're a Pirates fan, Twins, A's, Braves even, hashtag rock bottom. Let's see it.
Great job, Jordan. Very well done.
Thank you.
My Ugla is a Twitter account. Okay. It is a Twitter account that belongs to a gentleman named Eric Green. Now, Eric Green is the father of Nationals prospect Elijah Green. Elijah was a top five, I believe he was a fifth overall pick back in 2021. Yep. A high schooler, yep. I believe from Florida.
Florida.
IMG. I went to IMG. Now, Elijah Green has not exactly had the best 2022. My apologies. He has not had a great minor league career. There was a lot of swing and miss in the profile, and things have kind of gone south. Now, he seems to be an elite defender in the outfield.
Yes.
He might make the big leagues as like a, you know, Bubba Starling type, I guess. But confidence that this gentleman is going to hit is very low. Now, his father, Eric Green, was a Pro Bowl, two-time Pro Bowl tight end in the National Football League for the Pittsburgh Steelers. But now he is a Hall of Fame level tweeter. Earlier this week, Eric Green tweeted a video, a dash cam video of a Toyota very lightly tapping the back of a BMW in the parking lot, in the drive-thru of a Starbucks. Okay. Now, when I say lightly tapping, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see how lightly this was tapped. If you're not, if you're listening, just go to Eric Green, at Eric Green 86. It's great stuff. And Eric Green tweets, "Thank God for dash cam. Elijah Green," this is all caps, by the way, "Elijah Green at Starbucks only to get hit in the rear at the drive-thru line. He is fine, but the story is learning experience. Driver 2 gets out of his car with one of the saddest stories anybody ever heard. Champ was raised not to fall for the BS. This is, first of all, like, not to make light of the situation, but this is not a car accident. It is about as light as one vehicle could touch another vehicle. And I just love the idea that this was like a learning experience. And then Eric Green is like, I raised my son right. Like, the lessons and values that I instilled onto him, and he seems like a great dad. The lessons and values I instilled unto him, like, he, you know, balled them up and used them in this experience. And that experience is going to help make him a great impact baseball player.
I mean, I could talk about Eric Green's Twitter for hours. What I'm confused about is
Twitter account.
Whose dash cam is this? Because if we assume that the car that's getting doinked is Elijah Green, this dash cam is from the car two cars behind Elijah Green. How did they acquire? Right. Was Eric Green in the drive-thru two cars behind him? And then I'm just like, I'm so confused.
So about the best how they acquired Eric Green this tweet. Dash cam. The best Eric Green tweet of all time was last May when Elijah Green hit a double and did a little dance on second. And Eric Green tweeted, good piece of hitting, champ. Okay, I might get in big trouble for this one. The dance he is doing was the same dance his mom was doing when I met her at the world famous Magic City in ATL. Hashtag ha 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 ha. Just awesome. Just awesome. No notes. If you don't know what Magic City
is. All caps. Every tweet is... It doesn't even have to be like a hit or a homer about Elijah. Good play. Yes. Oh, for sure. And so I do hope that like he had a thank you, Mike Rizzo tweet after Mike Rizzo got fired, which is great.
Yep.
But yeah, it's awesome. It's incredible stuff. And I hope Elijah Green makes a big league just so that Eric can tweet literally every single thing that happens to him all the time.
I love,
hopefully no
I love
more
it.
Devastating car accidents.
That's true.
My Ugla. To finish us off here, is also a bad. Ooh, why is that? Jake Mintz, I got to expose you here for a second. Sorry, bud.
Oh, no.
On Monday, I was in Williamsport, or I was not in Williamsport, but I had been in Williamsport. And so normally on Monday's show, we talk about all the series that happened. And on Monday, I was in the PNC Park press box going back and looking at our show, about to tweet out the pod, was going over some stuff. And I realized no one pointed this out. No one emailed us, so maybe this doesn't matter. We just didn't even talk about the Blue Jays and Rangers series. Didn't even give it a half second because it wasn't on the document. And it's all Jake Mintz's fault. But something happened in that
games.
Series. I don't think that's true. But... what's most important is that Alejandro Kirk stole his first base of his career in that series. And they made a huge deal out of it because it was his first steal in his 532nd career game. And he got the base, which was delightful. And all the quotes afterwards were amazing. We had, I think this is from Chris Bassett. Quote, he's catching Ricky Henderson slowly, I think. which is a great quote. And then again,
an amazing
like this
picture
is a,
of him yeah. like leaving the yard with the bag, like holding it like on his way out.
Yes. So Alejandro Kirk, of course, one of the slowest players in baseball. A reminder, we've talked about Josh Naylor stealing a bunch of bases. A reminder that like if you set your mind to it, like you can steal bases in the big leagues also. But it did get me wondering, like, what is the record here? I mean, was he coming for a record if he didn't steal this base? Do you have a guess for the most? I mean, you're not going to know who this person is, but I was curious, did some stat heading most career games without a stolen base, non-pitcher division. And Omar Narvaez is very close to the top of the list. It is a lot of catchers. Omar Narvaez apparently played Major League Baseball this year, which is shocking to me. He has 681 career games with zero steals, has been caught twice, over 2,300 plate appearances. But the record belongs to a gentleman named Russ Nixon, a catcher from the 50s and 60s who played 906 games never stole a base, went 0-4-7. So, Russ Nixon, don't worry. Your record is safe because Alejandro Kirk stole a base. There you go. That's my ugly. All right, we're done. We have some good baseball coming up. We got Padres, Dodgers. We got Yankees, Red Sox. I know which one I'm more excited to watch. Pirates, Rockies. Just kidding. Paul Skeens will be pitching on Roku's Sunday morning leadoff. Excited for that. Nolan McLean's pitching on Friday. You should go read Jake's story about Nolan McLean. I learned some stuff there. That was enjoyable. The Royals. See if Vinny can stay hot against the Detroit Tigers. And yeah, we'll see. Maybe the Red Sox mop the Yankees. That would be unbelievable. But if they win the next two, we will watch on Sunday Night Baseball and see if they can do it. Otherwise, this has been a lovely episode of Baseball Barbercast here on this Friday. Remember, friends, you can now watch Baseball Barbercast on Yahoo Sports Network. Hello, first ever TV streaming channel available to stream on leading fast services. Also streaming live 24/7 on yahoosports.tv, where you can catch all the shows on your phone or your browser. But most importantly, Baseball Barbercast. There are some other great shows on the Yahoo Sports Network, but this is the one we would love for you to watch. Email us, baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. Thank you to TJ. I also like the phrasing, it's streaming 24/7. It's just like ours. Like literally, we just have a channel devoted strictly to us. Thank you to TJ Brassel, Andrew Hartz for producing as always. Have a lovely weekend. We'll talk to you all next week.
Thanks, man.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.